And if students are, and students should be given opportunities to improve that. And so the grading would only go up after the remote learning started. And that's, we've been giving those messages out to each of our teachers on many occasions through an assessment working group. So I just wanna give you that update about the reporting. Angela's going to talk a little bit about the IEPs and the IPRCs. That's been updated from the ministry. So we are working within the guidelines that that they shared. And I think that is it in terms of any specifics that I was going to share about remote learning and ministry direction. I'm going to jump down to staff role expectations, and then I'm going to finish my little bit, and then Angela's going to jump in and finish the other nuggets in this list. There is a link, and I'll share it with Leanne to put in the minutes, where we have given very clear expectations for each different role within the organization in terms of those that work with students. And so we have expectations for classroom teachers, rotary teachers, our ISP teachers, HSP, our support staff, EAs, SNAs. And so you can access that. It's on the public website. And we thought it was important for all of our staff to understand what we expect them to do during remote learning and really create, I guess what I would say, like kind of a standard of practice. We know that in many schools, they're going above and beyond and doing some really amazing things. But we also want to stress that it is about connecting with kids, engagement of kids, and ensuring that mental health and well-being is always at the forefront. So you can access those staff expectations. And what we've been saying to any parents that might have questions or concerns about what their child is experiencing is that we still want parents to follow our parent concern protocol. And if there are issues, they should talk to the teacher, the staff first. And if that's not resolved, then talk to the principal. Our principals are keeping in close contact, obviously, with their staff and with their superintendents. So if there's any questions about what the expectations are of staff, I would suggest you go through that route. And the last piece that I have in this list, and then I'll turn it over to Angela, is the non-digital student learning resources. We had a really overwhelming list of requests. We have sent out or in the process of finishing sending out over 12,000 learning packages. They are grouped K to 3 and they are grouped 4 to 8 with really specific subject level, grade level and subject specific learning activities. They're non-digital, so they are in paper format. And we know that we need to think about moving forward if we are in remote learning in any longer than the end of May. But that was a mammoth undertaking, as you can well imagine, with 12,000 requests for non-digital learning resources. And Angela will probably speak to a little bit more specifically. There is more work being done right now in terms of meeting really specific needs of our students with special education needs in terms of what non-digital will look like. So I'm going to stop there with those three nuggets, and I will turn it over to Angela, and then we can come back and address questions from this list. Angela, you're still muted.
Okay, how about now? Okay, great. Thanks. Thanks, Kathy. Hello, everyone. I can't believe it's already been a month. I read somewhere that April was the longest year they ever had. Anyways, okay, so I managed to send the leadership report in advance, so hopefully you've had a chance to review it. So I won't go into too much detail because you all do have access to it, and hopefully we'll have more of a conversation as you ask any questions. So the last time we connected around C equipment, the work was already started. And from the last time we spoke, we are now finishing off our phase two. So phase one was laptops and iPads and specialized C equipment. Phase two is more of the OT-PT type of equipment. And again, I do want to highlight the great and tremendous work that Vicki Adelson, Janine Small, and Adam Sotile have been doing, working together with schools to ensure that our families and students have access to the prescribed equipment to support them at home, as well as a shout out to the OTs. Just for clarification, I know we did get a couple of questions that if devices that were requested are no longer needed, for example, if you get a double, then you just refuse it upon delivery. But if you have already accepted the device, then we're asking you just hang on to it, and then you can return both devices to the school once we do reopening. I've also included a link should any families have any questions about their devices. My understanding is the IT responds truly in a timely fashion, because we know how some parents are still struggling, and we want to make sure that we support them again as soon as we can. The staff role expectations, Kathy already talked about. The link is embedded in the staff report, so you can have access to it right there. The what I find really, a bright spot in this whole transition to remote learning is the resiliency of a lot of our staff. And so capacity building does continue. It is thriving on so many levels. I think we mentioned last time we were together that we were working towards a Google Plus community where every exceptionality was supported. That continues to grow and have traction. The Autism Service Committee team also continued to provide key to learn webinars and sessions. And again, they're always full, and we're trying to find more opportunities to create even more to keep up with the demand. So that's always a good sign. CTCC is also very busy ensuring that that professional learning continues, and some of the information that Joy shared with us in regards to what is happening. Again, a good traction, good momentum, and one of the things we were having a conversation today with our congregated site principals is perhaps exploring a Google Classroom now for principals, because people are hearing how positive the Google Classroom communities the Google communities are actually proving to be. So something we're exploring. In regards to the ministry direction on IPRC, so yes, you heard we are continuing to do IPRCs remotely, and we will try to accommodate our families. If they prefer virtual, that's great. If they want teleconference, then we'll do that. I know there seems to be some questions around the word priority IPRCs. Priority doesn't mean instead of that we're not going to do other IPRCs. Priority means we acknowledge that there are several IPRCs that need to be done. We'll do them, but it not just yet, not now. We'll get to it, but not now. And so now the priority is what is on this list, because it really does have huge system impacts. If an IPRC is not on this list, the hope is once the students who are on this list are all done, then we will move to the next phase. And so I know there's some questions around that, and I can take that once we're open for discussion. But I just wanted to be clear that priority IPRCs doesn't mean instead of, or we're not going to do the other ones. We will, but when we get to it, it might be the last week of June, it might be August, it might be September. Ministry direction on IEPs. Again, we will continue to work on the IEPs. And in regards to assessment and evaluation, our message to our teachers is to continue your best to do as much assessment and evaluation that you can, considering the lives and the situations of all our families. We hear and understand that sometimes it's too difficult for students to spend time on the having screen time. And then we hear other people who are saying it's working really well. So we're taking it case by case. Each teacher is being asked to work with their families to ensure that the expectations are manageable and workable for both the student and the families. Non-digital resources, Kathy has already addressed. Summer school, really excited about summer school. We were really deliberating how to move forward with this, and the feedback was absolutely, let's do what we can to continue to support our families and our students this summer with remote learning. And so you'll see from the list that our DHH student, our students with DHH will continue. It says K to 8. Please note it's supposed to be grade 1 to 8. Our CTCC summer school is also going to continue. There's 14 classes ready to go. And I know Joy is doing lots of work behind the scenes for that. And I do want to give a shout out to Susan Moulton, who is overseeing the summer school for the rest of our students. And we do ISP classes as well. This year, the registration will be online. Once we get more information, and I know Susan can talk to it later, but it will be different this time. It won't be as specific, whereas before you would be asked address, so on and so forth, because now busing won't be an issue. It's going to look different. Again, the registration will be shared. If people don't have access to registration online, they'll contact the principal and we will find a different way to support our families. The congregated site communication. So we are meeting almost every 2 weeks with our congregated site principals to hear from them, to listen to some challenges and some successes, lots of wonderful stories that we're hearing. And so how do we share those good practices with other schools so that they can replicate? And in regards to some challenges, how do we collectively support each other to address those challenges? And so I have a small group that I meet with, and we talk about some of the issues, and then we go to the bigger group and we have an opportunity to really unpack these challenges and share strategies so that principals are learning with and from each other. So that's a positive. Special education plan and reviews. So as you know, we were really into...
Angela, can I just interrupt? I know special education plan and reviews is item number 5 on the list. Do we want to stop at this point and just get some questions before we go on to the next items?
Sure. Only because it was on the report, but absolutely. So I can stop here, not a problem, and take some questions. Yeah.
Nora's on the list first. Go ahead, Mom.
David's on the list. Can you put David on the list, please?
Yeah. So we're going to have, so it's going to be Nora, Richard, and then David right now. So go ahead, Nora.
Great, thank you. I guess my big question is, I know last time when we spoke, you were trying to find the families. So I'm just wondering if the board's keeping count of how many families they have heard nothing from. And because the likelihood of their needing special education supports in some kind, like social work or something, is pretty high. So I'm just wondering how many families we've heard nothing from, and if you guys know that number. And I had a second question, but I'll wait for that.
I can jump in, and then Angela, if she has more specifics. We are engaging our schools to find out account in terms of those students that they have not heard from. I don't have the number here. We haven't got it back, but we are in the process of doing that count.
Okay, great. And I know this sounds like a crazy idea, so this is more of a suggestion rather than a whatever question. I don't know, has the board ever thought of manning a helpline like 24/7 so that if somebody actually got to a payphone or whatever, they could call in and actually talk to a person? Because I'm just conscious of the fact that, you know, they may not have the ability to call when staff are there, and you know what I mean? That whole piece about how do you reach people, when you can reach people. Has there ever been a thought of like a hotline that would just be manned 24/7 so that if you find somebody finally reached in and they didn't have like home security or technology, we could sort of make a plan to help them? Just a thought.
So we have talked about that. There is, we do have a technology helpline. It's not 24/7. Can I just get, and we've actually heard from other jurisdictions, mostly in the States, that have these help desks. I'm just wondering, Nora, are you talking about well-being, mental health, reach out, or anything and all to do with remote learning?
Well, I'm talking about anything and all to do with remote learning. Like, so I'm just thinking, at one time in my life, I taught a kid who lived in a car. And I'm just thinking, if that was this time now, how would they find me and I find them? And how would I know how to help or educate or anything? Mm-hmm. Because they didn't have at the time, we didn't have cell phones, so they didn't have a phone. And so I'm just thinking at this point, if there are kids living in shelters, you know, some of the high school kids wouldn't have homes. And maybe they're not trying to find us, but I'm just wondering if sometimes school is the place that you actually know people. And if they do call in, but they don't have some place for us to call back.
Nora, I can jump in on this one. This was brought forward by the trustees. This was a request and some feedback that was provided several weeks ago, actually, probably about 4 or 5 weeks ago. And at that time, it was not something that the Director of Education was willing to do. So it has been brought forward, but nobody has taken that up. And it's exactly what you were talking about in terms of whatever help was needed. There is a Tech 9, but that's more complicated and technical stuff.
Yeah, I'm talking about kids who we don't even know where they are.
We had brought that, trustees brought that forward, and it didn't go anywhere. So just so you know that.
And Nora, just to add that, one of the things that every school worked on as part of their well-being SIP is caring adult. And so we always made sure that every child was connected to a caring adult. And it's those people, the principal, the teachers who are consistently calling. So it's not as if, oh, we called in April, so that's it. There's an ongoing attempt to reach out to these families.
No, Angela, I get that part. I don't mean that people are heartless. I think sometimes it's hard for us to realize people don't even have phones and they just give fake ones.
Yeah.
And it's not that I think staff aren't trying. I'm just saying I'm also consciously aware that there are kids and I don't think your average family realizes what they live like. Mm-hmm. And the school can attempt, but there's no answer. And it may need to be some way for them to reach back out to us whenever they get even an opportunity to do that, because some of them live pretty precarious lives.
And Nora, we'll take that forward. We do have a working team led by Associate Director Colleen Russell Rollins that's looking at student engagement, outreach. How are we reaching students? How are they letting us know what's going on in their lives? So we'll definitely share. We'll share this back.
Sure. Like even an ad in the paper every once in a while, it says, if you haven't touched your school, like do the following, because if they don't have devices or whatever, I know it's hard to fathom somebody doesn't have a device, but they may not. But this is what you do if you get a chance to call, do the following, right? Like, and post it somewhere in the paper, say it on the radio, something.
Can I, sorry to interrupt, Nora, I just have one more. I know we're trying to follow a speakers list here and we'll get back to that. I just have one more. Aline just has one more thing to say about that specific topic that you're talking about. So I'm just going to let her respond briefly to that. So Aline, do you want to just say what you wanted to say?
Yeah, I just wanted to see the, I think the inner cities, like the inner city schools, I don't know whether that's part and parcel with what Nora mentioned. And I actually support a community, you know, in one of the, actually two wards. And they are, I think the board tries and staff try very hard, but there are still loopholes, and I'm wondering if a partnership with a community agencies like the one that I'm working there, and I think that could help, because there are workers or community development staff that could work, or maybe they are already working, and I don't know, because that's not my capacity, but I'm just wondering if there's any partnership in place right now with community agencies.
I don't have the specifics. I know, like I said, there is a working group that is looking into all of the different aspects of us reaching out and reaching in. And we have our community support workers that obviously we're repurposing in a way that will continue some of that outreach. So we will share, and we can bring back an update next month. We'll share these ideas with the team for sure.
Thank you.
Nora, did you have anything else, or are you? It looks like you went back on mute, so I think you're okay.
Yeah, no,
so
no, that's okay. Mostly, okay. I'm just really worried. I'm just worried.
Okay. So we're going to take that
Nora,
one.
I would say, and so are we. I mean, we talk about remote learning. But we are really trying to emphasize, we have some guiding principles that we have at the front of all of the documentation, and I can kind of just reaching for it here. Even with our assessment work, whenever we reach out to our educators and our parents, we are actually saying our number one priority is to prioritize health and well-being of everyone. We are talking about how do we continue learning in different ways, and how are we maintaining relationships and connections with each other. And then the fourth one is engagement, which is really tied to relationships and mental health and well-being. And then the last guiding principle is we actually are focused on helping our staff build capacity in all of those. And I don't want... sometimes we get lost on it has to be about learning in terms of the achievement and, you know, what expectations are you learning today, but it's not lost on us that this is really a crisis situation for many, many families and many students, and how are we reaching kids so we ensure that they're safe is really our top priority. So I just want people to understand that.
And I'm sure, I think I just always am sensitive to the fact that, you know, it's one of those situations where inequities are exponentially noticeable now.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And we know that those gaps, and we've talked about underserved when we're in bricks and mortar, and those gaps and inequities are magnified in many cases when through remote learning as well.
Thank you, Kathy. Why don't we move to Richard, I think is the next on the speaker list.
Okay, thank you. And I just wanted to say a great thank you to the entire TESP team and staff for their work and efforts to continue the learning process and move forward. I mean, as you say, it's a huge undertaking, and everything is appreciated very much. I have three quick questions. From the Leadership and Learning School Improvement Report, page 4, you talk about the ISP and congregated site communication. I was interested kind of in the urgent needs and burning questions, and not necessarily tonight, but is this something that can be captured moving forward where we can benefit from this? And I ask that from a very positive perspective, as I actually reached out to one parent last night to say, how does this look for them and their child? And it was a very very positive feedback I got from them, indicating, you know, that they get to see the whole curriculum for the club, for the grade level. They're not just seeing chunks of it, so they're getting to look at everything. The interaction with the classmates is great. And the person's reading skills, I guess, have improved because they're having to be sit in front of the computer and look at some of the instructions. So that's been good. The only one question there, and this will come up as a question next, that the work isn't being graded. So I'm wondering, what is the mechanism for teachers to see the work the students are doing and evaluate it accordingly? The other two questions are very quick. You mentioned about the priority IPRCs. Obviously, the priority, I guess, is setting up your staffing for next year, assuming back to school in September. I'm assuming that's the biggest critical thing here is ensuring staffing. And the last one that I had basically, is there something that's gone home to parents to talk about how they can share their experience of their child's day in the remote learning and what's working, as you say, what's not, or how they can get evaluated? Thank you.
Thanks, Richard. So I'm glad to hear some positives around the online learning. There's lots of wonderful things that are happening. In regards to the mechanism for work to be graded, that's the conversation that happens between the family and the teacher. And if they're not receiving a response that they're hoping to hear, then the conversation's between the principal and the family. So at our level, we're not monitoring that. That's the expectation, is that it should happen, with the understanding that it's a case by case. Some families are, you know, well on their way with the assessment piece, and perhaps some are not because the child might be struggling. So it's a case by case conversation with the teacher and the principal. In regards to,
can I just add to that, Angela? And it also depends on the platform, the virtual platform that's being used. So the board is supporting Brightspace and Google Classrooms as the learning platform, which is it's a little bit different than just the video conferencing and the live streaming. But if a teacher is using Brightspace and Google Classroom, then students can upload to that space. Teachers can drop things in there and kids can grab. We know in some cases, kids are taking pictures of their work and sending it back by email if a teacher's not necessarily on a Brightspace or Google Classroom. So there are different mechanisms in terms of doing that exchange. One of the key pieces that we're hoping continues and actually strengthens, and this was part of the ministry mandate, is, as you're saying, the grading is a little bit different, and we this might be an opportunity not to focus on grades for the first time ever, to focus on learning is the thing. But what we're actually hoping that we see more of is meaningful, formative feedback to kids, and so they know how they're doing and how to improve. And so we are definitely messaging to our staff about the importance of feedback as part of that process.
Okay, and then I guess I think we already cleared the IPRC priority one. That is obviously about staffing. And I guess within the those questions, urgent needs and burning questions coming back, is this something moving forward that within the special education plan, we should have some sort of framework or template for what remote learning might look like again in the future if it was ever needed, or how we can capitalize on some of the great things that are happening now to benefit the students?
I think it's something we can actually consider. I'm just trying to get through the actual spec ed plan for next year, but that's absolutely something we can consider adding. And it might be part of, you know, the what we've learned through this experience so that we can bring forward in all our learning. So I will absolutely take a note of that. Thank you.
Okay, great. Because I obviously think
Richard?
Yes?
Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt. Go ahead.
All I was going to say was I think the benefit of the electronics and the platform for students, especially with, you know, special needs, the technology is what's going to help drive them forward. So mm-hmm. I think we've made it with the C claims and stuff. We were already at one point. This has taken it to another point, and it would be great to see this continue moving forward and not go backwards at all. Thank you.
We will echo your sentiments for sure. And you did ask another question that I just want to loop back to when you said, are we capturing students' experiences or what families are telling us? So the online thought exchange that I mentioned at the top of the piece, that is one mechanism that we're asking families to share what their experiences are. Right now we have... I looked just before we started this meeting, there were 7,670 responses already, which is great. It's a start. We have obviously far more families. And I was reading some of the comments, and so people are sharing some of their stories. We're also asking our staff to tap into principals and educators to share those best practices. Angela talked about the Google communities, and our educators are posting really great ideas on those Google communities and sharing, whether it be through video or photos or just anecdotes of what's working for their kids. And each of our exceptionalities has their own Google community, and so we are trying to capture what's working really well. And I think moving forward, there are thousands of educators that are on those Google communities that wouldn't have been on there prior to remote learning, even though many of those Google communities existed before because teachers like to support teachers. I think moving forward, those Google communities will just be strengthened even more. And it really is about collaboratively learning together. And I think it is hopefully a move in the right direction that will continue and will ensure that we support those Google communities of educators when we come out of this as well.
Fantastic, thank you.
Okay. Okay. I'm just trying to manage the chat. I'm getting some private and public stuff. So I'm just going to let.
And I was going to be next.
Alexander. Yeah. David's going to be next. You know what? Yeah. Alexander wanted to touch briefly with what Richard said, but maybe I'll just, there's a few more people on the list. So I think let's continue with the list. So let me just tell you who's on the list so everybody knows what's going on here, because there's lots of stuff. So we've got David, then Aline, then Julie, Melissa, and then Alexander. So that's where we're at for now. Okay, so go ahead, David.
Hi, thanks to everybody. I hope you can hear me clearly. And thank you for using Zoom. I'm going to try to get all my stuff in right now so I don't have to worry about you managing me on the list after, unless it's critical. Bless you to somebody who sneezed.
Thank you. Sorry.
So, several things. I want to begin by saying one thing has to be added to the staff report, and that is a huge, huge, huge thank you to Angela and to Kathy and their staff. Today, the AODA Alliance and the Ontario Autism Coalition held a, I believe, a very successful one-hour online virtual town hall on how frontline teachers and parents can more effectively educate kids with disabilities during this crisis. We're trying to fill a gap that the province is leaving, more than about that in a minute. But I reached out to both Kathy and Angela last week because we were, as volunteers, trying to find speakers. And they got on the phone with me within an extremely short amount of time, which is breathtaking normally and during a crisis, unbelievable. We're extremely supportive of the need for this and got folks to work finding us speakers. We only used one for the TDSB this time, who was excellent, Lisa Glover, but there are others who I'm gonna be passing on to the government in case they listen to us and do the next town hall, or in case we do. But I wanna really commend you for helping out in this. I encourage everyone to watch the town hall. I'll have the link to you as soon as it's available to me, hopefully after this meeting is over or by early in the morning. We'll have the permanently archived link. We did this for two reasons. One is because the provincial government is mostly talking about it's not providing the school boards like TDSB with the required help they need. They should be doing what we heard Kathy and Angela talking about, which is finding out from frontline teachers what works and then share it around. So school boards are reinventing the wheel. So we plucked some examples of these. And And we want the, we're trying to get the province to do what we did because they're not. We also got the Assistant Deputy Minister of Education for Special Ed actually on, and I put to him the question. He agreed this was extremely helpful, and he said he would take it back. But I put the question to him, like, can you guys take this over? We did this as volunteers, and I got a kind of a nice, we'll think about it, we'll talk about it. I invite SEAC to endorse the idea that the province should be reaching out directly, not just to directors of education and stuff, but directly to frontline teachers and parents to get ideas of what's working so every school board doesn't have to reinvent the wheel. And it's not a question of special ed plans and IPRCs and stuff like that. It's talking about, like, what can they do for your kid or mine, like tomorrow, that might work. I was amazed at the number of skills and ideas that could be brought together. So that's item number one. But a huge thank you to Angela and Kathy and their staff and to the folks who were prepared to take part. I wish I could have used them all. The second thing I wanted to identify is Angela called me last week with a fantastic question, which led me to include an element in the program today. And it's one I think we all need to talk about this meeting and next, which is what needs to be built into the return to school plan to accommodate kids with disabilities. And as a result of Angela putting the question to me a few days ago, it came up with some ideas for her and shared them today online. But there's one I want to table and say with staff, not for like an instant reaction spontaneously, but to say, can we work with you on this? There is going to be a need. It's going to be hard for all kids to go back, but for kids with particular disabilities, they are going to need a surge in supports. And the example I gave today is a kid who's blind, because I'm the one here for Views for the Visually Impaired for parents of blind kids. But what I'm going to say applies really to all, a wide spectrum of kids, so please don't think of this as blindness only. But what I explained is this. They only get a certain number of hours a week of a teacher of the visually impaired to do hands-on Braille teaching, determined by how much staff is available and how many other kids there are. Those kids can't get that kind of remote learning the same way over an iPad. And they're going to fall behind. There's some things you can teach over an iPad, but there's some things you just can't. Those kids are going to need a surge of this specialized training when they come back. It's not a matter of just saying, oh, well, let's go back to the same number of hours they used to get. Now, in fairness to the TDSB, they can't pull this rabbit out of a hat, which is why we told the province today, you need to work with school boards to plan for surge for support and ways to actually provide this, not only for kids with vision loss, but other kids who need this specialized support. I wanted to put that on the table because otherwise our kids are going to fall further behind. Other kids are going to fall even further behind. The last thing I wanted to just mention briefly, we've heard talk about online platforms and stuff like that. And by the way, that's just one idea I had about the return to school. I think we've all going to have a lot of other ideas, and I think we need to have an open discussion about that to help the staff. We've also called on the province to not make each school board reinvent that wheel. Let's come up with a collective solution so we can all get to work on it. But the final thing I want to talk about, a huge thank you and congrats for using Zoom. It is far more accessible. Sadly, some school boards are not allowing it, but what's happening at TDSB needs to change too. We were told at the last meeting in good faith that staff are free to use other platforms like Zoom, but the board is only actively supporting a couple. I talked to one school teacher who specifically said their understanding was they're not allowed to use Zoom, a TDSB teacher. Now, I'm not suggesting anybody was being dishonest to us at the meeting last time. I think the news isn't trickling down accurately. But not only that, but by actively supporting other platforms, the TDSB is actively creating barriers. Now, because the province hasn't done it, TDSB should do it. You should be like the mass email that went out to all TDSB families yesterday or the day before talked about using WebEx. It should be talking about using Zoom. And we are the Special Ed Advisory Committee. I'm here talking about a specific barrier being created that's impeding kids and parents with vision loss, with certain learning disabilities like dyslexia and so on. It's just not fair. So I'd like to suggest that we fix that final thing. I actually have one more and then I'm going to stop. We've heard talk about summer school for special ed, and I think that's fantastic. There is, however, a gap that needs to be filled, and I'm wondering if staff could either answer. I haven't talked to you about this before, so I don't want to put you guys on the spot. If you got an answer, let us know. If you don't, maybe you can bring it back and we can talk about it. But one thing is a kid enrolling in a course, if they are kids who are functioning in a full classroom course setting. But some of our kids are falling behind, and what they really need over the summer is some one-on-one support, essentially continuing on some of what's going on now, but over the summer to help pull them forward because they've lost so much ground. And I think we need to, I want to invite TDSB to look at providing that kind of support. I'm expecting our lockdown is going to continue this summer and summer camps are going to be happening. So we're going to have a lot of kids at home. And if there's a way to provide some ongoing school board one-to-one support or over iPad support, not just go to web and click here and look for something, because for some of our kids, that's not going to work. We need to see if we can use the summer months to help them out. I know that's outside the box because collective agreements normally give teachers the summer off, but I'm wondering if the board could look into that. Anyway, I'm going to hit mute now. I'm going to thank the board, staff, everybody for all they're doing. And I want to thank the committee, SEAC, for moving to Zoom, because for me, it's makes an enormous difference. Thanks a lot and stay safe.
Thank you, David. It's Kathy. I'll just jump in. I can speak a little bit around Zoom. So we did take a stand at the very beginning, and we had actually, I know, a conversation a little bit around the SEAC table about some of the shortcomings of Zoom and the security issues of Zoom. And what we said to staff, because we didn't want to stop people from using it, we actually then in probably the very second communication that followed really quickly on the heels of the first was use whatever platform you can use that you're comfortable with. And so when we're using Zoom, we are really talking about our video conferencing or live streaming. And we know our IT team consistently and continually do privacy checks and assessments of the different products. So because Zoom has got so much press lately, they have actually improved some of those issues around privacy. So we are adapting some of the expectations in terms of whether people can use Zoom or not. We also know, I mean, and it's not a free tool. If you're using over, I think, 40 minutes, it's not free. Brightspace and Google Classroom are different learning environments that are free. So I'll just say we have changed the message around Zoom. But in terms of the IPRCs and why we went with WebEx, we are also working within an environment, and Angela might be able to provide more specific details. So I don't want to get too much in the weeds on this, but we have multiple colleges of professionals that have rules that govern their own members. And so some of our colleges, such as some of our psychologists, they do have rules around what video conferencing tools that they would support. And so what we found was there was a little bit all over the map, but the one tool that we could get more consensus in using was WebEx. And so that's why we went to WebEx, so we could actually get the ISTs and SSTs and IPRCs up and running, because there were no real concerns, I guess, with using that. So I think what we've found, and it's been a little bit of an uphill battle and made it a little bit more challenging, is trying to come to terms with what expectations each of the different colleges have for their members. So we are working through that, and we're taking the positive approach that there is no hill that we can't climb and get over for the sake of doing what's right for our kids. But we will continue working with Zoom as a video conferencing platform, and hopefully we'll get a little bit more details about what we can share about that moving forward.
Kathy, it's David. Just for one sec, I appreciate your explaining it, but the one thing that's missing from this conversation is the Ontario Human Rights Code, and if Zoom accommodates people with certain disabilities, the College of Psychologists doesn't get prevail over the Human Rights Code, and that's what's missing here, and it needs not to be missing here. And the other thing is, I don't know why the College of Psychologists would be that way. I happen to know that the Department of Psychology at York University routinely uses Zoom for their activities. So if there's someone you're running up against this with, let's you and I loop in separately, but it's really important. Parents, kids, teachers with various disabilities for whom these are barriers, shouldn't have to invoke their human rights in the middle of this.
It's Angela. And so I just want to address that. So I did have a conversation with Kevin Bradbeer in IT. And again, it is a case by case. So if we know that there is a family who strongly wishes to have this for those reasons that you just described, we will accommodate. So it's not for the reasons Kathy shared, the back and forth with our support staff, WebEx is what we landed with, acknowledging that if a family, for whatever reasons, does request this to support them, then we will do it on a case by case.
Well, that then what I would suggest, just as my last suggestion, this is the first I've heard that, and I think as a parent and somebody involved with TDSB, there should be a broadcast email. Yesterday we were just told WebEx is it. There was nothing in there that said if you need to use Zoom for disability related accommodations, we will.
We'll work
that should be broadcast to everybody.
Communication, David. I think that's important.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay. I think everything was addressed for David then, I believe. So why don't we move on to Aline, I think is next on the list.
Hi, everyone. Hi.
Hi.
Am I?
Yeah.
Hello. Okay. Okay, I'm good. So I would like to also thank staff, and I think it's been quite a interesting and challenging month, but also quite fruitful. I heard from communities, they actually enjoy remote learning and be able to build their social stories or journals using Google Classroom, Google Notes. So I myself actually help my own child to do stories over Google Notes. So that's a good learning for a number of families. So I just wanted to appreciate that. And I think that that's a great segue, I think, to build on the returning to school, hopefully soon, if for the next school year. Because I think the IT support is, the flexibility of support is crucial, because I find that with families, parents working from 9 to 5, it's very difficult to call in during that time. So I don't know whether there's any possibility of flexibility. And I know that for instance, like calling, I don't know, that may not be a justifiable comparison to like calling in banks or calling in like insurances. We were able to call from 8 to 8. So I don't know where's any possibilities to be able to work with families. Because I actually attended a seminar that is by Autism Ontario last week. And then they actually took on using Google Notes to be part and parcel with a resume or an interview session going in to answer the burning question of, can you tell me something about yourself? I was so excited and be able to see that presentation using Google Notes. So I'm just wondering, maybe we can expand this a little bit more as part of a vocational tool. So then I just want to share that, and then maybe we can talk about that a little bit more.
So, if I'm understanding your question, if teachers can be available outside of the hours of 9 to 5?
So, I find that if it's any way that could be accommodating, that would be good. I think teachers a little bit difficult because of their hours, but I think that with IT support, because I've been trying to connect with them, I actually was able to make it to 5, but then the call dropped. Then I couldn't get back in, have to try again next day at 8 o'clock. So it was a little bit frustrated on my end.
So thanks for sharing that. Right, because teachers are asked to work within the instructional day.
Right, right.
I'm wondering, did you use that link that's in the...
Yes.
Did that work, or you're saying not really?
Yeah, for myself and for a number of families that are in a similar boat as myself, that both working at the same time, very difficult to get in on those hours. Yeah, because sometimes you have to be put on hold, right? So I just want to pass along that thought, you know, for you know, looking into that's number one. And number two, and I think that David also mentioned in one of his emails about maybe perhaps we can use some of the sites, the ISB class or schools that are less populated, for instance, congregated site as far as social distancing is concerned, because I'm very nervous going back in whatever time we are going back, either, you know, later in May, June, or maybe in September, because I don't really want to have to go through something similar right now with the group, like the homes right now. So I'm just really concerned about, you know, in classes, how tight fit things are. So that's where my concern is. So I'm wondering, maybe we can use some of the sites, the schools that are close by, be able to do some social distancing as far as programming is concerned.
Aileen, I can address that. So we do have lots of teams working on lots of different ideas. So we do have a team that's looking at the reopening of schools. Angela had reached out, and I think that's on our agenda coming up as well. So there's going to be lots of scenarios that we run through that, and we're looking at the logistics, the operational side of things, the buildings that we have, what needs to be in place, as well as the programming side of things. So there, it's too early yet to come forward with some ideas. We have no idea right now what that will look like in the timeline, but we do have teams that are working on different, what we would call contingency plans or scenarios of once we get the word of what reopening may look like for schools.
Thank you. And I actually collected some thoughts from a town hall that I attended with my community. So I'm going to pass that along to you as well.
Yeah, please do. Thanks, Aileen.
You're most welcome.
Thanks, Aileen.
Okay, so we're at Julie. Julie is next on the list.
Hi, everyone. So basically, I don't know if this was addressed. I think you were talking about K-8 with regards to grading. I was just wondering what high school, I've heard from some parents that, and I'm not sure if it's just a rumor mill, but that grading for high school, their mark kind of stays and can't go lower than where it was at midterm. And then kind of they can get, I guess, extra assignments that can possibly raise their grade, or just I was kind of, you know, wondering if you could enlighten me a little bit about what high school looks like.
It's the same. So the expectation is, and the direction from the ministry is that the grade that students had prior to school closing, which was the day before March break, mm-hmm. is the grade that the student will get on their final report card, unless there is a unless through some of the work and engagement and the assignments that students do between, you know, April 6th and whenever we do end, actually improves the mark. So we're thinking of it through the lens of it must be beneficial to the kids. It's a, you know, do no harm sort of thinking, that a mark cannot go down. Okay. Those students that have disengaged, they're not going to be losing marks because they're disengaged. But if students are going to be engaged in doing some learning tasks to actually improve their marks, teachers will use those, and in terms of secondary language, weight them in a different way. And so marks could go up from prior, but they won't go down.
Okay. And what about the students that don't really have access to, you know, computers or remote learning? I guess they'll be contacting and getting the paper copies, and then they still have the opportunity. Like, I'm just trying to think of how, where the equity plays in, where if they don't have access or they aren't able to, or their home life prevents them from being able to raise that mark. I guess, are there things that they can maybe connect with the principal, and then it's kind of decided case by case, or?
For sure, case by case. We want to make sure that we are giving every child the opportunity to improve. And when we talked about the number of our kids, I think Nora asked the question, do we have a number of those kids that haven't engaged? Our secondary schools are reaching out through classroom teachers or homeroom teachers, through support staff, guidance, student success. Even some of our principals and vice principals have an alpha list of kids that they have to, you know, pick up the phone and call. So we are, I don't have those numbers with me, but we have given the expectation to each of the schools that we need to know who are the kids that don't have access. Mm-hmm. And who have not been online or have not engaged in whatever way with staff. Mm-hmm. Again, just to go back to access to devices, there were 55,000 requests for laptop devices. I think when we talked last month, it was 22,000, and it ballooned to 55. We will ensure that every single child that requested a device will get a device. Mm-hmm. We started with our students with special education needs first, so they had a device before other students. The next priority list were our grade 12 students, knowing that we wanted them to be able to have the opportunity to improve marks because of access to post-secondary opportunities, and then it filtered down from there. Originally, we thought we would have everybody with their device within the first 2 weeks, and then it stretched to the end of April. We think by the end of this week, we will have all 55,000 devices delivered. It's been an unbelievable undertaking just in that front to get devices into the hands of our students. But we know there's still a few that are still waiting, unfortunately. Wow. We're doing our best to get them out there.
Wow, 55,000, like, you guys are champs. That's incredible. I can't even, so thank you for that.
Thanks, Julie. Right.
Yeah, that is pretty amazing. So, quite amazing. So I think Melissa wants to speak next. Melissa, can you
hear me now?
Yeah, we can. Yes.
Oh, wonderful.
And if there's a mute, somebody's got their something going on in the background. Could you mute everyone? I think we're good. Okay, now.
Okay, great. So thanks and hello everyone. My question is about the IPRC SEPRCs. I sent an email to Angela and Kathy earlier. I don't want to spend a lot of time on it. I'd just like to identify my concern to the group. So TDSB sent a memo basically saying that certain categories of IPRCs would be prioritized, others were not, and would be scheduled in September. I have a number of concerns about that. One is legislation requires that there be IPRCs every year. Secondly, Deputy Minister from the Ministry of Education just sent out a memo confirming that school boards are expected to continue with IPRCs. But from a practical point of view, I'm concerned that anything that's deferred to September leaves a lot of students in limbo. The uncertainty over the summer, the stress, but I think realistically, there's going to be more chaos and upheaval in September if school starts then than there is now in trying to schedule these meetings. And the problem is if kids don't effectively start on the first day of school in whatever their placement is, it's very unsettling, very disruptive for the student, for their classmates, for the teachers, for the staffing, in trying to get them placed later in the year. And for practical purposes, what often happens is either the student, the parents, the school, or everybody effectively gives up and says, we'll try again next year, which can be a problem in general, but specifically now with all of the upheaval that students have had, which may have greater impact on some special education students who are perhaps handling more. I think it's really disruptive and unfortunate to be deferring that. So Angela had clarified briefly before that the fact that things are deprioritized doesn't mean that they're canceled. It just means we'll deal with it later. But I think the practical effect is if there's a system-wide notice to staff and families that certain categories of reviews are deprioritized, it probably means that they're not going to happen. So I would request and strongly urge or encourage staff to consider these all as a priority, regardless of the profile of the student. I think a little bit of work up front will save a lot of work and grief later on. And those are basically my thoughts. There are other technical reasons, which I won't go into now.
Thanks, Melissa. So I thank you for your email earlier as well. And so we are following and abiding by the regulation, ensuring that we do have the IPRCs. But I just would like to remind everyone that we are working in a very truncated timeline. So if you recall, we had to work through labor sanctions. And then now we find ourselves with this remote learning piece. And so the timelines have truly been truncated, but the numbers of IPRCs continued to grow. And so we're trying our best to do as many IPRCs as we can within this truncated timeline. The priority IPRCs are not to say those are deprioritized or we're not getting to them, but to help principals and schools work efficiently and that we're all on the same page of how we're moving forward. That's the spirit of the IPRC priorities. So again, no IPRCs have been canceled. We hope to get to as many as we can, but again, keeping in mind the truncated timeline, the number of IPRCs that need to be done, there is no way possible to get every single IPRC done. We hope we could. We hope that there are some scenarios where parents will waive the IPRC and then they can move forward in a more expedited fashion, which will then allow more IPRCs to happen. So I think I'll just close with that to say no IPRCs have been canceled. It is just a way to work efficiently and manage the volume of IPRCs that need to be done and ensuring that principals have very clear next steps of how to move forward when organizing which IPRC to do next.
Am I still on?
Oh.
Yes.
Okay, so thank you very much, Angela. I just wanted to follow up on Angela's response so I can appreciate the truncated timeline, all of the different constraints. I think that in the interest of the kids and in the interest of not making more work and more grief later, whatever can be done to deal with them now is an improvement. I was hearing from parents who had been told in February that they would be very soon scheduled for an IPRC. Of course, they haven't heard anything at all yet. I'm not talking about the ordinary rubber stamp, yes, I want to stay where I am again, IPRCs. Hopefully, yes, parents will just sign off on those. Mm-hmm. But perhaps, you know, these are extraordinary times. Maybe some of this needs to go into early July or whatever is necessary. Maybe instead of having five people around the table, there's three staff. I don't know, you know, what kind of accommodations can be worked out, but I think the end goal is important to at least, this has been so disruptive, at least have people where they should be on the first day of school in September without undue stress to everyone.
I'll just jump in. Melissa, that absolutely is our end goal. We're not trying to, we are trying to work with as little disruption as possible. And so I think as Angela said, we are not ruling any and all scenarios out to make sure that we can get as many IPRCs done as possible. We actually are hoping that for the annual reviews that many parents would have wanted a face-to-face, they actually waive that if it's not going to change placement of their child, which hopefully will take some off the docket that might have been done in other years. But we're also realistic, and we also know what capacity we have to get it done. So, you know, we'll monitor this closely. Our special education learning center CAP, and many are on the line tonight, are monitoring this. They're giving us updates, and so we'll see how this progresses as we get into May and June.
Great. Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Perfect. Okay. So I see there's still quite a bit of stuff that we have to come up to. So for the speakers list, there's just two more people, Alexander and Nora, for this round. And what I recommend is after Nora is finished, then we just then we move on. So Alexander first.
Thank you, Diane. I just wanted to first of all, I wanted to say that all of the comments that I've heard tonight are very interesting and very important. I mean, all of these concerns, we all have these concerns. And I think what staff have said and reiterated is that, and I think everybody knows this, it's not surprising, is that we are on a path that we've never been on before. And so we are working to figure out how do we do this. This is part of what I was going to report in the trustee report, so I probably won't need to say it later. Just today, the Board of Trustees approved the formation of a special committee of the whole to as an emergency response to the pandemic. And the mandate of that committee is to provide feedback to the director and to staff as we move forward through this. So because it's a committee of the whole, it is a public meeting, and they will listen to delegations. So I'm encouraging everyone to come to that, and I'll have more details on when those are gonna be set. We just approved it today. You can come to that, or I mean, not come to it, but Zoom in or WebEx in, and share these exact points. For example, Richard's point about remote learning in the future. This is something that the school board, our school board, and I think every school board is gonna have to figure out. We can't just abandon it. When this pandemic is over, we're going to have to build it in. But the comments from the public and from SEAC are gonna be very important. David's comments about the ministry should reach out directly to teachers and find out what they're doing that works. This is something else that the committee can listen to. And if we, and I think everyone will agree with it, we can make sure that the ministry through the TDSB board knows this and we can help to facilitate that. The WebEx platform or Zoom platform, again, this is something else we can advocate for at the ministry level to say, you know, regardless of what happens this time around, the future is uncertain. And so we have to have platforms that are accessible so we can work with them, hopefully, to get them to move forward on that. And the issue of IPRCs as well. How do you do that remotely? The ministry also has to take some lead on this, but I think that the school board, the TDSB, and many of the other school boards in the province can also help to ensure that that happens. So I just wanted people to know that the Committee of the Whole, the special emergency, I don't know what we're calling it, emergency response, whatever, to the pandemic, Committee of the Whole, will be a forum for the public to provide feedback to the trustees, and then for the trustees to provide feedback and direction to the board, to staff, to the director. But also we can work to ensure that the ministry is flagged with all of these things. So we can put it together in a package and say, here's what we've come up with. So I think it's going to be an important committee to bring all of these things together. I just wanted to put that out there so that everyone knows, and we'll share the information about when the committee is meeting so that everyone can get on board. And I notice on today's agenda as well, there's a subcommittee that would like to form at SEAC, which can directly report to the Committee of the Whole as well. And those are my comments. I don't know if anybody wants to ask a question, but I can address any questions as well. Thank you.
So Alexander, there's a couple of questions on the chat. If you want to just maybe chat and respond that way if you want. And I think Nora, or you can, why don't you just go ahead and respond to it, because they're right there. Can you see them?
Are you sharing details for that meeting here, Alexander? I can't share them right now because we haven't decided on when it's going to happen. We just approved the committee today, so they have to work out the schedule. But I'm sure that we can share it with you once we have it. Trustees, Alexander, trustees in that emergency committee. Yeah, it's from Aline. It's only trustees on the emergency committee. It's a committee of the whole, so it is a board committee. And that's it. Okay.
Great. Thank you, Alexander. And I believe the last speaker for this segment will be Nora, and then we'll move on. Nora?
I guess I just wanted to say that I appreciate that staff are trying to plan for an end of a year they didn't expect, a next year that might look typical, and then another next year that might not look typical. So I think it's understandable that resources are stretched trying to figure out three different platforms to move forward in education. And so I think one of the things I think our committee needs to focus on is the equity issue of disability and the fact that there are students who are still not able to access education despite the staff's Herculean efforts of 55,000 laptops and, you know, 12,000 hand packages. And I think that the hardest part right now is it's probably taking an inordinate amount of energy for them to try and meet immediate needs while simultaneously planning for two systems. So while I understand it, it's one of those things where if we start up, it's going to be less than ideal, I think, for a lot of people in the fall. And the staff's working really hard for it not to be so. But I don't know how you plan for something going in blind when literally the ministry is extending how long this goes on 2 weeks at a time. But I think there are kids that need to be found. And I think we know that there most likely are kids. often. And so I appreciate staff's efforts on that. And I think my question that I initially put my X in for is coming up with the subcommittee for eventual reopening, because I have concerns about populations if things reopen and don't look typical. So I'll wait till six.
Okay, perfect. So yeah, that's number six. So good. Are you good then, Nora? Have your question been?
Yeah, no, I'm good. I'll wait for six. Yep.
So do you want to move on to the next one? I think we're at secondary review.
Yeah, I think we're at secondary review.
I think she talked about it already.
I don't think I did actually, Angela.
Okay, go ahead.
You and I have talked about it. We have so many conversations that we can't keep them all straight anymore. And all of them are on WebEx or right. They all run into each other. Anyway, there was a request. I can't remember if it came up at last month's meeting or in between, just to do an update on secondary review. So I do have some information that I'd like to share with everybody. And I, and forgive me if I've already said this at a previous meeting. There is a secondary review that is done each month at Committee of the Whole, and the reports are all posted on the secondary program review page. I will send the link to that page to Leanne, and she'll put it in the minutes so you can take a look. The last update on secondary program review was update number 4. And it was presented to Committee of the Whole on April 7th and approved at the board on April 22nd. I think the important piece that people need to understand is that because this is such an important public consultation, the public consultations have been put on pause during the pandemic and school closures because there was a worry or concern that, and rightly so, families are engaged in their own issues and need to focus their attention where it should be, and that we didn't want to cut off the ability to consult. So the consultation progress on the specialized schools and program policy was originally going to close on April 20th, but the deadline has been extended into the fall. And the online survey that's there now will remain open. And so just so if people still have comments that they would like to make, you can continue to do so on the online survey. So I think that's the most important point of this work. A couple of the other pieces that came up just in terms of the LTPS meetings that went on with trustees and the operation teams and superintendents. So that input has gone on, and perhaps Michelle, Trustee Arts or Trustee Brown would like to comment on that. And Ron Felsen just sent me a little note that said, the secondary program review page has been updated and has reflected the comments and questions that have come through the survey as well as direct emails. So when you do give input, it is looked at and considered. So I just wanted to say that. And the last point, at the next Committee of the Whole in May, the secondary review will present a concept map of school groupings and identify key issues within each group. And then this map will be made available to the public for the public to provide feedback and input. So that's the secondary review update. Diane, over to you.
Sorry about that. Okay, so we are at
Spec-Ed.
The Spec-Ed now, yeah.
Yep, Spec-Ed plan and reviews.
Okay, great. So we did ask the ministry if the due date for the Spec-Ed plan would be extended. We haven't heard back yet. So that is something we're trying to get back on track with. In regards to the IP or the IEPs and the ISP review, that has been put on pause. So although the Spec-Ed plan is also on pause, we're hoping to get back to that as the due date continues to get closer. But the reviews are on pause, and hopefully once we get through the next phase of this remote transition, we can get back to it. So I just wanted to keep you in the loop so that no one would think, you know, where's the work? So it's not that we don't want to do the work, it's just we can't get to it yet, but it's in queue. Any questions before I go on to the next point?
Melissa, I think, has a question about that. Do you?
Go ahead, Melissa.
Did you have a question, Melissa? You have an X there.
But how to X to the full group. Just a quick update. There was a PAC on SEAC virtual meeting this morning. A number of the representatives of other associations in other SEACs across the province also expressed concern about the regular business of school boards and of SEACs being put on hold because of the extraordinary circumstances. And I think there are going to be requests elsewhere in the province to also defer the deadline for filing the special education plan. So hopefully that'll all come together provincially.
That's wonderful news. Thanks, Melissa.
Okay.
Great. Okay. So I think we are, I don't see any other questions. So why don't we go into the subcommittee?
Great, thank you. So we want to get ahead of the game, so to speak, and start having those conversations about the eventual reopening of the schools. And we'd like to really hear from you to help with the thinking. And so what I'm asking for is if there are at least five members who are interested to sit with me virtually one afternoon for perhaps 90 minutes, and we'll send you a Zoom link so that we could hear your thoughts around what you envision, what are your concerns, what are your hopes for us to consider as we start to engage in deep thinking and eventual implementation of our return to school. So if you are interested, kindly send your name to Leanne, and then more information will be forthcoming. It's blowing up.
I think you've got a whole bunch of five or what? How do you want to do this?
Yeah, I just need a small group. So maybe we can talk offline, and I'll connect with you and Nora, and we can move forward together.
Yeah, I'll collect the names of who's here, and then we can go from there. Sounds good. Okay.
Were there questions? Did people have questions other than being interested, or?
I don't have much information really to share in regards to any planning. All I know is in preparation for the planning, I'd like to be able to bring SEAC's thoughts forward.
And so
Kathy, I don't know if you're cutting out on my
end. I lost Kathy. Yep, yeah, I lost Kathy.
I wonder if she can hear us. Maybe, can we send a chat to her? I don't know if she can hear us either. Is everybody else having that difficulty?
Yeah, no, I can't hear her either.
Okay, I'm sending a note here. Yeah. Okay, we'll just keep moving forward and we'll get her back. Forward, Kathy, I don't know if you can hear us or not.
Yeah.
And then we will come back to you when we get you back. So we are
trustee update. I guess we're at trustee update. Yeah,
right.
Trustee. So I guess Alexander's already gone. So does Michelle have something she wants to share, or?
I have something else.
You have something else? Oh, Alexander has something else to share first. Michelle, can you go on mute for a bit? Yeah. Alexander's got something else. Go ahead.
This is new information today. As you may be aware, today our Director of Education tendered his resignation, and you may not be aware. So he will no longer be at the board as of November 1st, 2020. And so we will be putting together a committee to do a director search for a new director at the TDSB. And what I would, what I'm going to do when we develop that committee is to suggest that we also do public and community consultations. I'm not sure exactly how they'll look, but I would definitely be looking for feedback from our SEAC members that I can take to the committee to share, especially in terms of what qualifications we're looking for in a new director. So I just wanted to put that out there. That is also very new information as of today. So I can't give you any more details, but I wanted to just flag it so that everyone was aware of it. And that is it. I'm not sure if Michelle has anything else to add.
Michelle, you can go now.
Actually, no, I think that's the really big news. We did okay our, as I said, trustee committee today. I was going to say things board wise are kind of slow. I mean, the really big updates came from Kathy around the pieces on getting devices out for students, accommodating different modes of learning, trying to get a lot more professional development rolled out for teachers. I don't know, Kathy, I didn't hear if you had covered yet the numbers of hours of professional development that have been logged.
Sorry, I completely lost my internet. Everything crashed. Anyway, I'm back on. No, I didn't share that. I think I shared that back in the first couple of weeks, but I don't have those numbers with me now. We can look them up. We had thousands. Last that I saw, there were, I think, 3,000 educators that had gone online to do some of the training for anything to do with Brightspace and Google Classroom. I actually asked today for the update, and I will get those numbers. I just didn't get them in time for the meeting.
Did you have something else to say, Kathy, before we lost you? I think you were in the middle of...
I was in the middle of my sentence, and then I got all flustered when I lost connection. I can't remember okay. What it was. Right. Anyway, if it comes back to me, I'll chime in.
Okay.
Well, a question just popped up about inner cities. So the committee's not meeting right now. We are supposed to have just a chair's conference meeting this week. We're just trying to set up a time that works for everybody. So I'll have an update for next time. With respect to need in terms of some of the big needs in terms of food, the big program from the TDSB is running through the Toronto Foundation for Student Success. And there they've been able to move over $300,000 through the TDSB in grocery cards and food cards for families in need. That's primarily gone to our model schools, or families in our model schools. But I had a ward check-in with my councils and principals last week, and essentially some of the need pieces that have come back, the two pieces that have come back from the model schools primarily is that, yes, everybody got their food cards out, or actually not just model schools, other schools spent their nutrition budgets to send out food cards or packages to families. But now that we are entering 7 weeks of people being at home, a lot of those families are coming back. So the Toronto Foundation for Student Success Food for Kids program will continue to operate as long as they can raise funds. There is, if you want to share it with other communities, there is an online fundraiser. So TFSS Food for Kids program. And as long as they're bringing in donations, they'll continue to feed kids. A large number of our schools, our model schools, are working with neighborhood agencies. So in the East End, I know, our schools are working with the neighborhood group and Access Alliance to identify need, and our principals and staff are working together with those groups to stock and send out food hampers for families. So there's a lot that way. There's some coordination with the city. Some of our CSWs, our community support workers, are working with the city and the community development office on initiatives that will run through the schools, again, to identify families in need in our high needs areas and coordinate food programs for them. The other piece, a lot of our model schools are, the staff are engaged in additional PD at the school level for teachers, but also reaching out one-on-one by phone and providing advice and parent PD. So coordinating some more supports for parents to be able to navigate the online learning piece. Are there any questions on that?
I have a question. Mm-hmm. I guess my big question is, so one of the fabulous things about the model schools is there are structures in place to sort of plan around this. I'm just concerned about some of the schools whose LOI is like close, but not quite enough, if you know what I mean, and how many of those families might not have been in need, and are principals being given direction to be able to access food cards for families that they think have food insecurity, even if they're not in a model school?
Yes. So I'll give you an example. One of our schools, G.A. Brown, in my ward, is not a model school, but draws from neighborhoods or areas of neighborhoods where there's high need. And the principal has identified which families there have need. And then they use their school budget, what they had in their school budget allocated for nutrition and other pieces of their school budget to send food to those families, or make send gift card or food cards, or do online transfers for food vouchers. So I know that each principals in every school have been asked to identify individual need, whether it be for devices or food or social supports, and coordinate getting those to those families.
That's great. And I guess my other question was about, so this has put the board in a weird situation where they would have expected to spend money on certain things, but are now spending money on other things. My assumption is like special education budget funds are still being spent on special education students, especially since we always exceed that amount of money anyway. Is there going to be a document at some point that's going to sort of produce how the budget ended up being spent in the long run? Does that make sense? Like, I feel like there must have been money for professional learning in one way to be offered to releasing teachers or doing whatever that's now not being spent that way. And how is it being spent, or on what, or did we blow it on, spend it on the attack? Like, I totally get it. I was just wondering if there'd be an update on how we anticipated money was going to go this way, but now it went that way.
Yes. So that will be coming to, I'm not sure when it will be coming, but it'll be coming to the finance committee. Okay. So we have asked for that. Mostly because the province is actually not forwarding any additional money for emergency measures at this time. They are also waiting on taking a wait and see with the work to rule then leading into the school closures. Yes, there are areas where we're not spending money and then areas where we're spending a lot more money.
Right.
So the province wants to say, let's see how it all falls out in the end. And there's been no promise of additional funds if we're spending beyond what we had. We've just been told to use our GSNs to fill in the gaps.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Sorry. So Nora, do you want to take over from here? And because we're getting near the...
Okay.
I'll let you continue staying. I don't have any more questions. I don't think I have any more questions.
Diane, I think Alexander wanted to jump in.
Oh, okay, Alexander. Sorry. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I just wanted to add to the whole discussion on the budget. We actually have not really even started looking at our budget. I have not seen any documents that tell us mostly because the grants for student needs haven't been released yet. At least I don't think they have.
Right.
I haven't seen anything. So this is an issue that the board is going to have to take a look at. And as I said, the Committee of the Whole is going to be looking at this as well. In terms of special education, a report on where we've been spending money, I think that's actually a really good idea. Especially as Nora pointed out, we always end up putting a lot more money into it than we're given as an envelope. It's a concern that I have, and I think it's something that needs to be brought forward clearly, because there's a lot of other trustees on the board who don't have a good understanding of how our special education funding works or where the funding goes. And in fact, sometimes I'm even a little bit perplexed by how it all works. So I agree with you that we need some clarity on that. Again, though, in this particular case, dealing with all of the stuff that we're dealing with, just getting through this and trying to ensure that we do continue to provide as much support for our kids as possible is something that I think everyone is grappling with. So it's a good point. I've made notes on things that everybody has said tonight that I will be bringing to the Committee of the Whole and putting them on the table for further discussion. Thank you.
That'd be great. I think also in the chat, in case people aren't monitoring the chat, Richard had brought up an idea about once we've determined who's going to be people who will sit in the Zoom chat with Angela about the subcommittee for eventual school reopening, we might prior to that have people contribute to that group so they can take everybody's shared perspectives. Because after having listened to David's town hall today, it makes you really realize what a multidisciplinary need there is to really understand barriers for all different disabilities, because it's very difficult to understand or perceive what is a barrier to one person versus another person. So I do think it's really important that we collectively contribute to that plan. And I think it'll be important for us to share back to them. I would say, you know, for example, a large part of my understanding would be about people with autism and intellectual disabilities, which is going to be very different from somebody who is deaf or hard of hearing. So we're all going to need to contribute to that, I think. So Richard will loop everybody together once we know who those people are and make sure that there's a good conversation vehicle between the two. So thank you for that. And I guess we're on to other business. David had asked to be other business, but did you address that, David, already? Is David still there? Maybe not.
I still see his name, but he's okay. Muted. Leanne, you could do the unmuting.
David, did you want to share any other business?
About that. I just wasn't finding the button. I was a bit distant from my phone.
That's okay.
Yeah, no, I covered everything except I've circulated two things. One is a letter that Views for the Visually Impaired, Ontario Parents Visually Impaired Children, has sent the government about the need for them to improve both the training and availability of teachers for the visually impaired. I talked to you folks a bit about this. We will be doing more on it, but I want to keep you posted. That's just for your information and to be posted. And I have just circulated to our email list the link that is now live to our today's virtual town hall. So it's available if you want to click and watch it. The first 4 or 5 minutes aren't captioned except through automated captioning, but we're going to get that fixed. But for the moment, that's the way it is. Anyway, thanks so much again, and everybody, and stay safe.
Okay, great. And then I believe, Leanne, maybe you can help me understand, was the email from the Toronto Family Network forwarded to all the SIAC members, so everybody has that?
They sent it to an old distribution list, So I don't believe everybody got it. It was really just asking about the meeting.
Yep.
And a few questions. So I think the majority of people got it. I can forward it on. I did respond to both emails and shared as much information as I could with them.
Right.
So I can see if anybody didn't get it, I can forward it to them.
And primarily their concerns were about where the meeting still being held, correct? And how they could get access to the information?
Correct.
Okay. And you've addressed that. So that's great. Yep. So I think, believe it or not, with 10 minutes to go, we are at Paul, did you have anything you wanted to say?
I see you next. Thank you.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, cool. Great. No, I just wanted to say May is traditionally Hearing Awareness Month. So at Voice for Deaf and Hard of Hearing Children, we would have been having a annual conference and fundraising, Dress Loud Day at schools across Toronto and elsewhere, etc. A little muted in that sense this year, but I wanted to point out that in fact it is Hearing Awareness Month.
Oh, thank you. That coincides for me because professionally I spent a weekend researching accommodations for the hard of hearing.
Mm.
So that's great timing for me.
Great. Well, happy to share resources if you need anything.
Thank you. Actually, I will reach out to you about that. Mm-hmm. So I think, is there anyone else that has business from any of their associations? Okay, then I think we're ready to. I'm ready. Can I have anyone? Can I have someone move to adjourn the meeting? All right, Richard's motion to adjourn. Paul's approved it. So, anyone in dissent? Then so moved. Meeting is adjourned. Thank you once again. I think all of us have heard a lot about how staff are working diligently to support kids. And once again, I thank you for all of that hard work. And hopefully everyone is still safe and doing well themselves. And I hope everyone takes care till we meet again.
Thanks, Nora. Thanks, Diane. Be well, everybody. Stay safe.
Thanks, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.